Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, everyone. Hope you're all getting through the week. It is hump day. I know, halfway through. It's funny. Whenever I used to say that, I always felt, you know, for those of us that have a full week ahead, but, you know, a lot of people are now at home. And so they're saying, it's Wednesday. When did it become Wednesday already? Oh, I know. We're going to be talking in our next segment about, you know, time creep and ways to have better sleep hygiene. But until we get there, y'all hang in there. The more we do what we need to do, the sooner all of this gets to end. You know, it's funny to see those memes where it says, I feel like we keep getting in trouble, like back in school when someone doesn't follow the rules and recess gets taken away. Yep, that's right. Every time I see someone talking about doing a group dinner or going hiking together or some kind of outdoor group fitness, I think, you are not following the rules. We are all going to pay for this. So please, please, please continue with the social distancing. You know, I'm watching the numbers come in. LA is finally starting, unfortunately, to have the numbers of death rise. And for those that think it's just those that are high risk, which we used to say with, you know, with those, I think 16 older had respiratory issues, not the case. We are watching cases of people die. LA had their first case of a death of someone under the age 18. And I myself, between yesterday and today, three people I know have passed away that are in their mid-20s and they were healthy. So please take this seriously. My concern is that the more familiar we get hearing these things discussed, it's going to be normalized, which means the needed healthy anxiety is going to drop. Oh, that's not what I want to have happen. So I'm not trying to scare you all, but I am trying to maintain a healthy level of anxiety that will keep us self-isolating, social distancing, and washing our hands. So continue to do that. We're talking more now, though, about the fact that anything you bring into your home should be cleansed. That's right. Paper and plastic, you have to wipe them down. It can live on those surfaces. So you have to wipe down everything. So please keep that up because, again, you're doing it for yourself, but also more of a global collective consciousness. You're doing it to protect those around you because it is not just the elderly and the vulnerable. Now, for those that are keeping up with the news, our horrible, horrible president is now talking about how the economy has to be centered and a priority. And, look, deaths and people's lives should come first, but unfortunately, he's implying that if some people have to die in order to get the economy going again and, you know, ending these, you know, self-isolation and social distancing by Easter, which I think is far too soon, you know, people's lives have to come first. So we'll keep tracking that, seeing what's happening. Now, we were also noticing that there was long lines to buy guns. Well, here in LA, the county sheriff has decided that guns are not an essential business, and those by LA County has been ordered to close. So those that got your guns, congrats. I'm not really sure what you're thinking is going to happen or why you need those, but hey, you got it in there. So that got shut down. Also, we talked on our show last night about how LA parks are closing. Again, I think that's a good thing. If you don't play with your toys fairly, they get taken away. Case in point. So that's been taken away. So please stay home so nothing else has to get taken. Also, pay attention to factual news. There's a lot of articles that are getting spread around that are misinformation, right? And that means that we're getting facts that aren't really verified. And Purell right now is getting sued for some misleading claims on the effectiveness of using their hand gel. Look, the gift is the best way to prevent this is soap and water. And that is very accessible. I was at Target the other day to get some basic needs met with, you know, various things, and they are overloaded with soap. So we're not running out on soap, but soap and water. Purell, not as effective, but if it is, it has to be at at least over 60%, but their claims were a little misleading, so they're getting sued for that. And also, I'm reading a lot of news around the wealthy getting their COVID-19 tests, whereas the rest of us aren't having such easy access. But LA is now setting up some testing centers, so that's going to powerfully change. So I'm thankful for that, because again, if you're not able to get tested, you're not aware of being positive. And if you're not having, you know, symptoms that are forcing you to go to the hospital, you're possibly still preventing it and maybe writing it off as something that it isn't. And so I'm glad that this testing is going to be made more accessible, because then we have people like Rand Paul, who is not self-quarantining while he's awaiting for his test results. And that AKA is him walking around spreading it to people. I don't know what's going on. I don't know why everyone's struggling with this. Those in the Republican Party are still calling this somewhat of a hoax, and they're more focused on the economy, where those of us in other camps are saying, hey, let's just stay home and collectively let the end date come closer and sooner and get this over and done with. Why extend this? Also, I hope you're all checking out my I'm Listening, Stay Connected live streaming show. And that's a powerful, powerful thing. And what we're doing with that is just really trying to let people know that we're here and we're listening, trying to, you know, provide expert facts and rhetoric, but also really talking about the intersection of mental health, because our mental health collectively is being impacted by this, and we're not really going to necessarily see to what the full extent is until afterwards. But people are talking a lot about anxiety, depression, and that's something I want people to take seriously. And the way we do that is by continuing the conversation around it, right? And that's one of the best ways is relationality. Thank God for technology, because it's giving us safe distancing access to people. So again, you want proximity to be removed, but we don't have to socially distance in that we can still stay close and connected to those that we care about and that we love. So utilize all that. And again, remember, every time you talk about your mental health struggles, you're giving the person you're talking to permission to have that same conversation with you. You're letting them know, like, I'm a safe person to have this conversation with. Not everyone is having access or able to utilize therapy, but if you can, please take advantage of that. I'm still seeing patients via FaceTime and phone calls, making myself accessible. So, you know, use the resources you have access to. All right, coming up next, we're going to be talking about sleep and insomnia and ways to combat that. So stick around for that. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on channel Q.
All right, we're back. And now it's time to talk about something really important. And this is something that we're all really getting impacted with, which is really what's fascinating to me, is that a lot of us are having a lot of the same collective issues, and sleep is one of them. So there's this concept called time creep. Now, a lot of us are not in our normal lives, and so we don't have the same benchmarks, where a lot of us, our days are punctuated with breakfast, lunch, dinner, workout routine, taking the dog for a walk, maybe picking up your children at school, elements of going to work or being at work. Without that, the day can just seem endless. And hours can go by quickly or slowly. But what's really important are all the decisions you're making within those hours that are going to impact bed. The reason why going to bed and how well you're sleeping is important is because stress hormones are going to powerfully either support or erode at your immune functioning. Now, the more stress we have in our bodies, the more levels of cortisol we're going to have. And that, again, is not healthy for our immune system. And that's really what we want to be thinking about. Now, sleep is one of the most powerful ways and one of the best ways to really support reducing cortisol and stress and also aiding our immune system. So sleep is probably one of the most important things right now. So I want us to really focus and pay attention to that. And what that means is centering your day around its impact on sleep. That's so imperative for biological health and mental health. So it's not just a matter of, oh, sleep doesn't really matter right now. I can go to bed whenever, I can wake up whenever, it doesn't matter how many hours. Oh, it really does. Now, the standard rule of thumb is anywhere between 7 and 9 hours is going to be what you're shooting for. But again, it's not just getting sleep, it's also the quality of sleep. And others are saying, well, that's fine. I'll drink alcohol, I'll take sleeping pills. But again, there's certain elements you want to consider. Melatonin helps us get to sleep, GABA helps us stay asleep, and all the choices you make are going to decide whether or not we can have access to that and the levels we need. Alcohol is not supportive of a good night's sleep. Alcohol will help you fall asleep. Why? It's a central nervous depressant, but it's not going to help you stay asleep. It actually is going to possibly have you waking up during the night, but also not getting a deep level of rest. and that's imperative. So what are the things we need to pay attention to? Okay, well, first off, I'm talking about limiting alcohol. Limiting your alcohol consumption, but especially before going to bed. You cannot just drink whatever you want, how much you want, whenever you want, and think that it doesn't matter, because it does. So you want to really limit the alcohol use prior to going to bed. Now, we also talked a little bit about in other shows, well, how do I know and check in on whether or not I'm drinking in the best way? Well, how do you feel afterwards? That's the best barometer to decide whether or not your current coping mechanism is actually self-care or not. If you feel good afterwards, you're doing good. If you don't feel great afterwards or during, then that's probably not the best choice. Also, I tell people, if you're in a great mood, alcohol is going to amplify that. If you're in a horrible mood, stress, anxiety, depression, it will amplify that. It'll lead to a lot of problems and conflict. So if you're feeling stressed or depressed or feeling bad, that is not the time to engage in alcohol consumption. Find another coping mechanism. So we do want to pay attention to the role alcohol is playing in our lives. Right now, it is not a free-for-all. We still want to be focused on self-care and things that are immune function supportive of our immune functioning. So it does matter, because some people are thinking it's just a free-for-all. Again, not adding a lot of guilt in for the food you're eating, but also trying to focus and center nutrient-dense foods, because again, that also has an impact on our sleep and our immune functioning. Also napping. Look, I want people to have access to naps, but you want to limit them. They should be once a day for about 30 minutes. You don't want to be napping close to the time you need to go to bed. And again, limiting your naps during the afternoon to about 30 minutes. Also, you don't want to be reading really triggering, stimulating things before bed. And when I say stimulating, I mean things that are going to make us feel a little stressed and overwhelmed. So knowing what time you want to go to bed, about an hour or so before, put your phone down and turn off the news. And instead, focus on things that soothe you. Music, taking a bath, watching something that's humorous or funny, but nothing that's going to spike your stimulation. Right? You want to be something engaging in things that are soothing before bed. Also, going to bed at the same time and waking up at the same time. And again, that's how we prevent time creep, where we are just going to bed and waking up at strange hours. No, really maintain a routine. So going to bed and getting up at the same time is going to be what's going to make our lives feel normal and structured, and also helping us get really high quality sleep, right? Because it's about that as well. Turning off your electronics in the bedroom, again, not being on them before you go to bed. So it's not just what you're watching or looking at, but it's also that you're utilizing it. That has shown in studies that it doesn't help us have restful sleep. So I say leave electronics out of the bedroom. And that follows into our other tip. Make the bedroom only about sleep. The bedroom should not be what is used as your office. Make workspaces outside of the bedroom. The bedroom is left for sleep and for sex, right? Leaving it prioritized in that way, because you want our body to associate laying in bed and sitting in bed with a soothing association that will also help nurture a good night's sleep. Not going to bed anxious, we talked about that, and also just doing really wind down self-care based things. I'm doing that. I'm doing the same work that I'm having you all do. I'm paying attention to these things. So knowing what time my bedtime is, an hour before that, I'm checking in and saying, all right, am I now starting to engage in things that are going to help me transition to a soothing and good night's sleep? So I might take a bath. I might play some music. I might even go for a nice self-isolated walk outside. But again, I engage in all these things that are going to quiet me down, not wake me up and stimulate me. Because I'm talking to friends and also patients that I'm still seeing via phone and FaceTime. And they're talking about these problematic conversations they're having, and they're not sleeping well, and they're eating high, you know, things with high volumes of sugar before sleep, or they're drinking and passing out, but waking up. All these things really matter, again, for both our immune functioning, but also our mental health, because now more than ever, I want people to be really sensitive to focusing on both of those things. We are in it for the long haul. We don't know how long we're going to be needing to self-isolate. And so we have to set these routines now, right? Don't wait. Don't wait until it's too late. Really pay attention to all of that. It's going to matter in the long term and also the short term, because also your mental health impacts the mental health of those around you, especially if you're self-isolating with a family member or a loved one. So pay attention to that. All right, question of the night. Sliding into those DMs. We got those coming up. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. Question of the night. As always, it's up on our Loveline IG page. I wanted to share with you a study that's very concerning, because again, we're talking so much these days about really taking what's happening seriously. And we need people to be practicing, you know, the hand washing and the hygiene, but also the social distancing and the, you know, isolation. So I saw a study and it says, here's the headline, fewer Americans see the pandemic as a real threat. Now, that's a problem because if we don't take it seriously, we don't, as they say, flatten the curve, right? So the study shows that 56% of Americans consider the coronavirus a real threat. Now, that number is not high enough, and that's also a drop of 10% from last month. And that's my concern, is that as people start to get really comfortable hearing about it, they might start to back off on really understanding the severity and the need to really take this seriously. So that's not good. And at the same time, the study also showed that a growing number think that the coronavirus is being blown out of proportion. Now, again, the experts keep saying we want to look back and be able to say, oh, that felt like we blew it out of proportion, because that's a sign we really went as far as we needed to. We don't want to do the opposite, which is to realize, wow, looking back, we didn't take this seriously enough. This is something we want to cut off at the knees. So when I see that there's a drop in percentage points of people that are seeing it as a real threat, that's not okay. And that's why I constantly am trying to harp upon the issue that this is real. This is something we have to take seriously. Please stay home. Employers, please send everyone home. Give them the sick pay they need. And everyone that is at home, please take this seriously. The social distancing, the self-isolation, the washing your hands. Because again, I'm watching people get really, really familiar with everything we're talking about. And that starts to decrease some of the anxiety. We want people to still carry what we call a healthy level of anxiety. And that means that they're not psychologically overwhelmed, but they are activated, as we say, enough that they're still constantly monitoring their hand washing and also the surfaces that they're touching, and also really focusing on staying home and doing all the self-care practices that we talk about. Look, y'all love being on your phones and technology. Settle into being on that couch and just resting and relaxing or getting the work done you need to do, because that's really, really, really what's going to help us get through this. So again, we need to get those 10 percentage points back up, and we need to see it not be a growing thing that people are getting, you know, seeing this as out of proportion. Now, the other piece that's really fascinating is when we look at the political party differences, because the study also shows that a majority of Republicans say that this is overblown, whereas a majority of Democrats consider it an actual legitimate threat. Now, that bipartisan perspective is not going to help us, because again, we need everyone to be taking this seriously, because if not, what's going to happen is this is going to keep rolling on. There's going to be more mortality around it. So joining us is Mr. Jarrett Hill, Loveline's political correspondent. Welcome to the show, Jarrett.
Hey, what's going on?
All right, so Jarrett, what's that about? The majority of Republicans saying overblown, Democrats considering a legitimate threat. What is that? Tell us.
Well, I think it has everything to do with how people get their information. Realistically, Republicans are watching Fox News. We know that Fox News has their viewers have the highest propensity to vote. We know that they attempt to be the most engaged, but they also are the most ill-informed, if you will. Okay. They tend to get information that comes from Sean Hannity or Tucker Carlson or Laura Ingraham, who are people who literally have relationships with the President of the United States. We know that Sean Hannity is on the phone with the President of the United States regularly, like in the evenings, right? And so when you are seeing information through the Donald Trump lens, you are going to see it in a way that is more positive. But like, if you just look at the facts, this president only less than two weeks ago was saying that, oh, it's only 15 people, it's not a big deal, and then was calling it a Democratic hoax, and now it's a state of emergency. Those two things do not go together, right? So it's definitely about where they're getting their information and the lens through which they're getting their information.
Well, well said. I hadn't looked at it like that. And I think that that's really important, because, again, there's so much misinformation. There are a lot of actual hoax going around about this. So it is really important that we look at the source of our information. That's why, you know, our medical health expert, Dr. Jen Wider, she's working closely with the CDC. And it's really unfortunate that we can't pay attention to what's coming out of the current administration, and that we have to go to the CDC, who they themselves are making pronouncements that are getting ignored. Right.
Well, absolutely. Right. And like, there's misinformation and there's disinformation. Misinformation being like, this is just not correct. Disinformation being like, this is wrong information that I'm decidedly giving you to disinform you. And like, we have the White House is saying 10 people should not gather. CDC is saying 50 people should not gather. The governor of California is saying a different number. The governor of New York is saying another. And so it's confusing, and you don't know what to do with this information. So while you're getting it all from Fox News, if you're more than likely a Republican getting information from Fox News, it's very confusing. Who can know what to think?
Yeah. And that's why we got to stick to some of the medical experts. Mr. Jarrett Hill, thank you so much. Where can people find you?
You can find me everywhere at Jarrett Hill. You can check out my podcast, Fanti, F-A-N-T-I, a new episode every Thursday, and check it out.
Beautiful. Thank you. And coming up next, we'll be sliding into those DMs, listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on channel Q.
So for those that are new to the show, our DMs come from our Loveline IG page. You can slide into the DMs there and give us all your questions, or on my at Dr. Donahue IG page. Give us your DMs, or you can give us a call, 833-LOVE-001, 833-LOVE-001. DMs are awesome. Phone calls, though, allow me to ask all those extenuating contextual questions that I have that I don't get with the DMs. But let's see what we got right now.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding in the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world. We want you to explore with confidence. This is a good one. Hey, Dr. Chris, I love your show and everything you stand for. You're amazing. I was fat shamed in an NBA store. This woman said if I wear a medium size, my boobs will be exposed and I will look pregnant. Is there a way to clap back at them next time? I go shopping there often. Well, let me just make first the broad statement, which is, stop commenting on people's bodies, listeners. You know, again, it's all about understanding that we never know what's going on with someone. We don't know if they're trying to gain weight, lose weight. We don't know if they're struggling with an eating disorder or struggling with body dysmorphia. When you comment on someone's body, you're forcing them into that paradigm. You know, here this woman is going about her business, having a great day, and all of a sudden these statements make her have to stop and think about how she feels about her body and what she wants to wear. Don't force people into that paradigm. So it's better not to comment on people's bodies. You never know what they're struggling with. Comment and make compliments about everything else. You know what I mean? Like, you seem so happy. How are you doing? Or whatever it is. But so basically, also, there's a little sex negativity in here. Maybe you want your boobs exposed. There's nothing wrong with exposing some boob, right? We're making a lot of assumptions when we tell someone that, you know, their boobs are hanging out. More importantly, telling her she's going to look pregnant. You know, not usually a goal for a lot of people to look pregnant if they're not. So is there a way to clap back next time? Well, you know, again, not everyone has to use all these moments as a teaching moment. So it's not necessarily on you to have to do that. But if you choose to make it an educational moment, you could say, hey, listen, that was really hard to hear. It's not really the most compassionate thing to comment like that on someone's body. I'm just here to shop, you know, kind of let them know that what happened was not okay. If you don't want to do an educational moment, I always say just maybe set a boundary like, hey, you know what? Not really interested in your thoughts on my body or what I'm wearing, but thank you. Anything that kind of redirects them away, but I would stay away from the harshness or the attacking, because not everyone understands this stuff. But I'm sorry that happened. I can't imagine going into a store that I go into frequently and having someone, you know, say something like that to me. So I'm sorry that happened to you. We're all learning. So either you can educate them or just set that solid boundary like, hey, you know, I'm not really interested on your opinions as to how I look in something. Although in some clothing stores, people are definitely trained to do so. So, you know, those that are training people in a clothing store, kind of help them be a little more body positive with how they comment. It really should be about, what do you feel happy wearing? What do you feel comfortable in? Great. Then go with that. Not how do I look? How do you feel? You feel good? You feel comfortable? You feel like you look hot? Great, then you are. Go wear. You know what I mean? So trying to get people away from that whole idea that there's a certain way you got to look. So, you know, it's also that whole thing about dressing for your size. How about you just wear what you want? Like, you know what I mean? It's okay to look however you look in something. We don't all need to look a certain specific way. So, but that's, you know, it's the new year. We're trying to be better about this stuff. So we're going to work on it. We're going to focus. Sliding in the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world. We want you to explore with confidence. Question of the night. It's up on our Loveline IG page. So weigh in on that. We'll be breaking that on down later in the show. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on channel Q.
All right, we're back, and now it's time for our addiction segment. So, of course, we've got Dr. D. Jaffe joining us. How's it going?
Really, really good, man. How are you?
I'm well. How are you feeling? You feeling any better from last week?
I'm done. It's over.
Good. So, a fascinating thing that you posted, and it was about the impact of the opioid crisis and how a large percentage of the prescriptions are coming from dental work.
Yeah.
And I thought that that was really, really, really profound, because I know that we're just starting now to, well, we've been taking it seriously, but we're starting to take it more seriously. And I'm actually going to be working with LA's Department of Health on a project around all this. But talk to us a little bit about that piece, the whole dental work component, because I think a lot of people, you know, they go get healthcare and they trust whatever doctors tell them they need, and they don't always feel empowered to process other options. So walk us through that a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's... So here's the thing, right? When the opioid crisis started, we were talking about pain management or pain medication. And I think that's where everybody at least knew that opioids were being heavily prescribed. And I think that makes sense. Most of us know something hurts, you get an opiate pill. You know, we forget this now because we've been in this for 10 years, that's really. Right. But 10 years ago, if you went to your doctor and said, hey, my hip really hurts, they just give you some Oxy. It's we've left that world behind a little bit, but, you know, that's really the way that it used to be. And then there were these huge cycles, and you hear these insane stories, right, of small towns in the middle of nowhere that had, like, 4 million prescriptions a month for OxyContin yeah. for them and all that kind of stuff.
And there's a really powerful documentary right now. I don't know if it's, I think it's HBO, called The Pharmacist. And it's essentially rooted in this. There's a pharmacist who started to notice in his local town that he was getting thousands upon thousands of prescriptions for opioids, and they were at levels that would kill these smaller bodied framed individuals that were coming in, sometimes teenagers. And he started to track them and saw they were coming from the same doctor. And then he went to the doctor's clinic and sat outside and just saw a line of hundreds of people waiting to get in for prescriptions. It was a prescription mill. I digress.
Again, some of us are so far removed from this now that we forget that this existed.
Right.
But, you know, I went on Dr. Oz talking about a doctor in California who was the first doctor to get indicted criminally for this. You know, doctors just ran these clinics. They knew that as long as people were on these for a few days, they would, and by a few days, I mean, you know, a week or two, they would get massively, massively physiologically dependent.
Right.
And a lot of them, here's the scary thing, a lot of people wouldn't recognize it until they're months, sometimes a few years in. And then it's a beast to kick. And so people weren't looking outside of pain management for a long time. And because we did a good job, by the way, the CDC just recently reported that we've had the first drop in a decade in overall overdose death.
Beautiful.
Which is pretty amazing. But because we had been fighting this thing for so long, I think most people were kind of saying to themselves, well, you know, as long as pain management is handled in orthopedic care and things like that, which is, you know, broken legs, sore back, that kind of stuff, then everything will be fine. But yeah, there's like this lurking, not epidemic, but this lurking prescription source, which was dental surgery. And what researchers found is that even though, look, you know, you get your teeth extracted, it's freaking painful. So you need pain medication. But oftentimes, you know, 1 or 2 days are enough.
That's right.
But doctors, and I think you can speak more to this, actually, to be honest, than I can. I think doctors initially just really wanted to take care of their clients. And so, you know, I don't want my client to be in pain. So I give them more than they need because then they're going to like me more. The problem is 5, 6, 7 days, 2 weeks, a month, 2 months later, and you've got somebody who's got a real opiate problem.
And then push us into this conversation about the use of medical marijuana as a way to deal with coming off of opioids, because I think that that's really fascinating. That was also something that I saw you talking about.
Yeah, I love it. Look, everybody who knows me and follows me for a while knows I'm a follower of all things. People call it harm reduction.
Right.
But I call it just whatever the kitchen sink of solutions that is available out there. Especially in states where cannabis is legal, we know that cannabis and THC can be used as pain relief, as analgesics, right? As chemicals that will help reduce pain. That's not new. It's just that up to now, they've been illegal. And so there are definitely people who are testing the idea of transitioning from opiates to something that is at least physiologically less devastating to stop. And I would be remiss if I didn't even at least mention this. It's hotly debated in some circles, but kratom is another herbal sort of remedy that some opioid dependent individuals are using. And the idea is just simple. Look, have you ever taken a lot of opiates? I haven't.
I haven't. I'm actually one of those blessed few who's never had surgery or any major medical issues.
So I'm one of those people who, you know, I broke my leg in a motorcycle accident. That's how the arrest happened 20 years ago and all that stuff. But I got put on heavy duty Vicodin and some Percocets back then. I really didn't like opiates, but I can tell you something. And that was, I realized within I don't know, 5 to 7 days of taking it, that if I was taking them as prescribed, which was, you know, like every 4 to 6 hours, I had a really hard time getting off of them. So because I didn't actually like the effect, what I did was, you know, I would almost like not take the opiate until I was in so much pain I had to take it, just to have that space in there.
But that's because you had the knowledge. You had the awareness of what could happen, and you're trying to kind of combat that. But
I don't even know that I had the knowledge back then. I hated the feeling of it. This is the beginning of my journey. I just really didn't like the feeling. But the reason I'm saying it is it speaks to, there's a mistake, a misnomer of something that happens in our society. And people think that, you know, if you're addicted to opiates, you're only taking them because you really like them, right? You only take them because you really like the effect. That's not true. Some people take them because they like, it's called positive reinforcement. They like the effect that they give them. But there's this really big other thing, and it's called negative reinforcement. And negative reinforcement in neuroscience is the idea that you will do things to stop yourself from experiencing pain and discomfort. So a lot of people who are quote-unquote addicted to opiates right now are doing the opiates because if they don't do the opiates, they feel terrible, and so they'll keep doing it.
Beautiful. Let's finish that out next week. We'll jump back more into this. Dr. DeJoffe, where can people find you?
Easiest place to do it is thedjaffe.com. If you want to check out my book, go to theabstinencemyth.com.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Have an awesome night.
Thank you, buddy. You too.
You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on channel Q.
All right, we're back, and now it's time to slide into those DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms. It's a big old sex world. We want you to explore with confidence. Here we go. This is my first time sliding in the DMs. Hope I'm doing it right. You did. And for those listening, if you want your DM read on air, slide into the DMs on our Loveline IG page, and we will put them on air. Here we go, the rest of it. A friend of mine has been in a serious relationship and thinks she is ready to settle down with this particular man. The concern is that myself and others in their lives do not think they are compatible. They have very different personalities, sex drives, and values. I see my friend compromising her needs and wants in these areas. When is it appropriate, if at all, to express to someone you love dearly that you are concerned that they might be settling? Bam, there's so many pieces to that question. A couple things. First off, I say this very lovingly because it sounds like you do care about this person. Hold space for the idea that maybe you're being a little patronizing. You are saying essentially that you know better than this adult, and that's a very punchy and controversial thing to claim. But maybe that is accurate. Maybe from the outside or even from the inside, listening to this friend of yours talk about their concerns and whatnot, maybe you're thinking, oh my gosh, how's she not hearing herself, right? Concerns and personality, sex drive, values. I would essentially honestly say this. This is the journey this person seems to want to go on. Let them go on it. You have to lovingly allow adults in your life to make decisions that you might not understand or stand behind, but she'll learn from it and she'll be okay. I never worry about people making this mistake because you know what? If she realizes that this is something that doesn't have longevity or isn't healthiest for her, she's going to learn that. And then she's going to turn around and exit and have learned from that. So don't take away that learning experience from her. But short of her making really major life-changing decisions around this, I would just kind of back off because you don't want to risk isolating her and losing the friendship over that. So, you know, lovingly and compassionately, you can express what you see. I wouldn't use words like we're concerned or anything really, really heavy-handed, but I would just lovingly be like, huh, tell me more about your personality's compatibility. Tell me more about the sex drive compatibility and the values. Really just kind of ask lovingly interrogative questions so maybe she can come to that realization on her own with all the information in front of her. But if not, you let her do her thing. And if she needs to later backtrack out of that, break up, move out, whatever it is, she'll do it. She'll be okay. That's kind of part of the journey. Let people, you know, get the bumps and the bruises and learn from it. Don't try to necessarily protect people from every possible negative situation. But sounds like you're a loving friend, but you know, be a friend anyway. People don't always wind up in the relationships we think that they should be in. So there might be some value in it anyway. So hang tight. Sliding into DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sex of world. We want you to explore with confidence. And as always, our show is podcasted at wearechannelq.com. You can post them, share them, binge them, re-listen to them. We'll be back tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 10 p.m. Eastern. As always, thanks for hanging out with me. And y'all have an awesome, awesome night.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.